Hello, this is Brian Reynolds, volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library for Issues and Ideas on KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today we are joined by author Eldonna Edwards discussing her book, This I Know. Welcome, Eldonna.
Hi, Brian. It's really nice to be here.
I always enjoy having authors on the show. People who know me know that I was a librarian for many, many years. I'm addicted to books and reading. I'm especially interested in books written for young people because we really want them to learn to read and to have a pleasure in it, and also have that reading help them through their lives at the various stages. The book This I Know, could you tell us a little bit about it?
This I Know features a clairvoyant preacher's daughter who comes of age in the 1960s, 1970s Midwest, provincial Midwest.
And this daughter is representative of what kind of themes, or like we've got clairvoyant and Midwest. 60s was a turbulent time. I grew up then, at least that part I can remember. And a lot of things going on.
Well, she grows up in a very conservative family, which is very common in the rural Midwest. And still, even in contemporary times, there's a church pretty much on every corner where I grew up in West Michigan. So there was this constant in the book. There are themes of the struggle between spirituality and religion. There are struggles of father-daughter relationships and the daughter wanting approval and actually needing to learn to embrace herself or approve of herself. There's a distant or unreachable mother who suffers from depression in the film. I made it sound like a very sad, but it's not. There's a lot of sorrow woven through the book, but it's a very joyful book, in my opinion.
That's such good news. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself, for example, where you were born, grew up? You mentioned Western Michigan. Maybe the milieu or era. I always thought that one of my tricks of getting to know people is say, when did you graduate from high school? And the reason is that's 18, you know, coming of age. But the music, the politics, different things are. Anyways, tell us about yourself.
Well, I graduated from high school in 1977. You can do the math there. I've always felt a little like a left-behind flower child. I was born just a little bit too late to enjoy all the cool stuff like Woodstock and Haight-Ashbury. And I was aware of the Vietnam War going on in the background. I was aware of this kind of smashing cultures that also was happening. But I grew up in a very conservative family. My father was an evangelical minister. He wasn't nearly as interesting as Reverend Carter in the book because that would have been a really boring book. My dad was not a jerk. He was very strict and was very dogmatic in his beliefs, but he pretty much walked his talk, you know, of kindness and compassion. So that's where I grew up, was in West Michigan. Where you went home when the streetlights came on at the end of the day. And one of the reasons people ask me, why did you set this at this time period? Is it just because that's when you grew up? Partly, but it's also because we were able to still grasp onto our innocence in that time period. We didn't have the devices. We didn't have Siri. We didn't have Google. We didn't have Wikipedia. So you had to figure things out. And I think the stories are more interesting when the characters have to figure things out.
For sure. As a child of the 60s, I guess, I graduated in 68, the height of the Vietnam War, Richard Nixon, and things going on like that. And at the same time, there was, I want to use the word flowering on purpose, because there was a flowering of music and art and hope, you know, make love, not war, those kinds of things. And, of course, drugs as well, illegal drugs. But it was, as you say, a clash of lifestyles, a clash of philosophies, maybe the best of the best in some instances and the worst of the worst. It was an exciting time to grow up. I remember in my, I'm talking about myself, but it's significant because it's 50 years later. In April of my senior year, Martin Luther King, we lost. And then in June, Bobby Kennedy. And I remember thinking to myself, oh my gosh, what next? You know, the two icons of what we would call, I believe, hope and so forth. You grew up in Western Michigan, and would that be Southwest or Northwest, or were you on the lake at all?
Well, you can't see the mitten on the radio, but I would be across from the thumb in the, right about in the center, okay. near Grand Rapids, mm-hmm. Northwest of Grand Rapids, really, really close, within a mile or so of Lake Michigan.
What brought you out west?
Mostly weather. And also, I mentioned, culturally and socially, it really wasn't always the best fit for me. I've always felt more at home. And my friends often joke about the stork dropping me on the wrong left coast. This feels like where I found my tribe.
There's a famous quote, I don't know where it came from, but it's comparing Texas and California, one being more conservative and the California more liberal. But the idea is Austin and Bakersfield should switch places. Back and forth, if you get the meaning. Bakersfield being pretty conservative in Austin.
Exactly.
You know, kind of like Boulder, Colorado.
Right.
So how long have you been here in the area?
I moved here in 1997. Mm-hmm. So it's been over 20 years now. And I go back to visit. Mm-hmm. And my family is a very large family that I grew up in. And they're very supportive. Just came back from a book tour there, and it was amazing. It was an amazing experience.
My wife's from the Midwest, and we were just on the East Coast visiting relatives for a few days, and it's another world in so many ways. Greenery versus here, it's dry, but different ideas and those kinds of things. How did you, in your young life, how did you move around to being an author? This is your debut novel, but you had written a memoir before this?
I wrote a memoir previously. I donated a kidney to a complete stranger in 2010, and that was featured in a documentary called Perfect Strangers, and that showed on a PBS channel, and I traveled with the film. And at those Q&A sessions after the film, I realized there was so much that couldn't be answered in a one-hour documentary about why. So I ended up writing a memoir called Lost in Transplantation. And then writing that book. I had actually started This I Know before then. I'd put it aside to work on the memoir, but writing that really helped me. It helped me hone my craft. It gave me confidence. I learned a lot. I connected with other writers. I built a platform. But if you ask me when I first knew I was a writer, probably as a child. You know, I wrote poetry even. I was 9 years old. I wrote this poem for my mom, and I know it was just titled Mother. And I don't remember anything about the poem. I just remember her reaction to it. And that reaction, that emotional connection, was what, when I went, aha.
Oh, that's so special.
This is a thing.
And, of course, you didn't know that poetry is one of the hardest things to do, at least to do well. You know, it's almost like think of a statue that is honed down until there's just the essence of the creature you're trying to create. That's the poem, you know, without all the frou-frou and the extras. So you wrote the memoir on giving a kidney transplant or offering that. Is it appropriate, or I don't know if I can even ask this question, but in just a few words, what motivated you to do that? I mean, it's an act of altruism, caritas, great courage. What was it that stimulated you to do that?
Well, this goes back partly to my upbringing as well. As I was raised in an evangelical family, I'm more of a secular humanist, I guess I would say. Right. If you want to put a label, I don't really like labels. But I was raised in a atmosphere of kindness and compassion and giving of yourself. I was taking some classes just to enhance, you know, to do a little more studying. My son was going to Cuesta College. I'm like, well, as long as I'm driving him here, I might as well take some extra classes. And I met a gal with kidney disease, ended up writing a paper, arguing for altruistic donation. And during that research, I discovered that I could actually be part of the solution and decided to do it.
Wow. And maybe this is a trite question, but were you able to meet the recipient of your kidney? And
I didn't know who it was going to at the time. He found me on Facebook, actually, about 6 weeks after the surgery. I got a message through Facebook, are you my kidney donor? I had sent an adoption letter with my kidney, and he figured it out. Not many people named Aldana.
Right. And so you did make contact, and what was that like? I'm just curious.
It felt really good. I was afraid it would be awkward, but it wasn't at all. He was extremely grateful, but gracious. by not being like that effusive, overflowing kind of way.
Right.
We couldn't be more opposite. When you donate a kidney, they actually ask you, is there any, you know, you can put parameters on it. Mm-hmm. You could say, I want it to go to a young person or whatever. And I jokingly said, I just don't want it to go to Dick Cheney. and my recipient turns out to be about as close as you could get to Dick Cheney. So
did you tell him that story?
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's in the film. It's in the film. He talks about it and laughs. He's the one says, well, now, you know, I joke, you know, the gods are kind of rolling on their backs, kicking their feet, going, well, you thought you knew everything, didn't you?
Yeah, there's one attribute of a deity, which I think he or she's got to have a great sense of humor. I mean, that's a given.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about your book, This I Know. What spurred you to write it? And then I'd like to have you describe some of the themes in the book.
I've known for a long time that I wanted to write this book. My background was so rich, so fertile with these rural characters. They're little idioms. They say things like, well, she ain't no bigger in a minute. Or let that Bert go, it ain't paying rent. Or, I mean, not quite as Southern as that, although I had Southern relatives, so I hear it in a Southern voice. Don't put the kettle on, Ma, we ain't staying. There's just this very, very quaint kind of vernacular, I should say. And I wanted to capture that, but I also really wanted to juxtapose a man with very black and white belief system against his love for his family, most especially an individual who challenges those belief systems. So that's where I came up with the idea of a daughter in an evangelical, fundamentalist evangelical family who possesses these uncanny abilities that really pushes the limits.
Not having read the book yet, does your heroine, does she have siblings?
Yes, she has four siblings, sorry. And they're all named by her father, Hope, Joy, Chastity, Grace, and then Mom names the last one.
So the your heroine, and what her name is?
Her name is Grace.
Grace is different than her siblings, obviously.
She's different on the outside, but what bothers her most is how different she is on the inside. She's the only one that inherited her father's red hair, and they're all blonde and blue-eyed like their mother. But she also inherited this deep intuition that her mother also had but suppressed. So
we were discussing earlier the definition of spirituality versus religion, and I made the comment, to me, spirituality is the individual versus religion is what people do in groups, similar things, but, you know, it's a group effort. This clairvoyance thing must have set Grace apart from her siblings, from other children. Maybe you could even call it an intense type of spirituality, not a willful type, since she had the gift and didn't ask for it. How, without giving away too much of the plot, how did her father and she get on the road to reconciliation? Was there an event or a process where they began to want to understand one another?
It comes very late in the book, so it would be a spoiler. Mm-hmm. I'll just say that her father, her family, her community shuns her to some degree, fears her to a greater degree, but exploits her when they want to make money off her or they want information. It's easy to exploit her, but then turn their back on her when she really needs them. So the father, she communicates her twin did not survive the birth. And so he's the person she goes to, and she goes into her closet and she has these conversations with him, and she asks about what is God, what is spirituality, why do these bad things happen, why is my mom depressed, you know, all these things. And they have these conversations, and he helps her find the answers within herself. He doesn't give her the answers, but he helps her find the answers to understand why her father, to reassure her that her father loves her, he just doesn't understand her, and he's afraid of what he doesn't know and understand.
So her twin was a boy, or was a boy. brother.
Yes.
And,
his name is Isaac.
That is intriguing to me. I know that you can be two twins of, you know, the same gender or different gender, but I'm guessing there must be a very special bond between a brother and a sister who are twins. You know, something that's maybe just different. You know, the gender, different spiritual magnetism or whatever else. And so one of her, one of Grace's muses, if you will, would be her brother. And is anybody else in her family or in the community friendly or approachable or helps her get through this?
She has three very specific allies. Her Aunt Pearl, who lives in Mississippi and comes to visit and help out with things, really encourages her and helps her understand that this clairvoyance is a gift. It is not a curse, because she starts to believe that it's a curse. And she also befriends a homeless man. His name is Lyle, who sometimes sleeps in the loft of their barn, who becomes a confidant. And then a gal moves into town, kind of bohemian family with very hippie, arty parents, and she spends a lot of time with Lola, who also has kind of a crush on Grace. So those, if not for that, those people that kind of live on the fringe of society are the ones that she finds are the ones that actually embrace her and support her.
You know, it's interesting. It's not a surprise that a family would have relatives in the South, or that, to me, that countercultural folks would move to town or have an influence. But the idea of a homeless person being given shelter in somebody's home or even their barn these days is pretty unusual. And to me, it seems even more unusual that Grace would develop or have the opportunity, if you will, to develop a relationship with Lyle and learn from each other, that it would be permitted or tolerated. I think that's kind of fascinating. It, to me, it shows a kind of compassion and worldly wisdom that probably makes the book even better and more interesting. I would like to remind everyone that this is Brian Reynolds, volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library for Issues and Ideas on KCBX, public radio for the Central Coast. Today we are joined by author Eldonna Edwards, and we're discussing her new novel, This I Know. We were talking earlier, Eldonna, about the audience for your book, and I think anybody who writes anything tries to convince, and they're thinking about typical person or class of people they're trying to convince of certain things or entertain them. And you mentioned, or I use the term, a librarian would use the term, is it a young adult book? And you said, well, it's got some mature themes. And I think we agreed that there's a dynamic or a tension there between, on the one hand, the issues that young people going through teenage years, puberty, face, and them learning about those issues, how to cope and succeed, from different sources, parents versus church versus school versus books they might read. And as a librarian, I also know that there's many controversies about books. Judy Blume comes to mind. There's many that writing honest books with themes that are relevant or interesting to teenagers is a bit risky. Did you think about those things when you got started?
I did. I always assumed that my audience, when I teach the writers' conference here, and people ask me, what do you mean when you say know your audience? And I said, well, look in the mirror, because most people write the kind of books that they would like to read. So I assumed that this book would appeal to people from the Midwest, people who grew up during the 60s and 70s, women of a certain age, especially because it's a female protagonist. I also knew, in fact, when I first started pitching and querying agents, I put in my pitch that I thought it would cross over to young adult, with the caveat that there were some mature themes there, and it very much depends on the individual. I know some very mature 11-year-olds and some very immature 15-year-olds that probably wouldn't be able to handle it. So
I tend to believe that maturity is not so much a function of age, but life experiences and success or lack thereof in dealing with them. Because, heck, I've known people in their 60s and 70s that can act childish, and we don't have to name any names today on the show. did you face any issues, say from your publisher or if you had an editor, about some of the themes or the topics in the novel. Were any kind of people or pressures on you that you didn't want to go, and if so, did you resist, and so on?
You mean, did they ask me to change anything?
Right, rewrite things.
No, I was very fortunate. My partner, Brer, is my developmental editor. And he's amazing. He's extremely systematic. He's brutal, but kind. otherwise, he probably wouldn't still be my partner. We cleaned that manuscript up so well that when the publisher got it, and then I also got some notes from my agent, too. So I revised again before she shopped the manuscript. And he said it was one of the cleanest manuscripts he'd ever come across his desk, which was a huge compliment.
Wow.
He just had a few notes that he wanted me to flesh out a couple of things in the narrative or the emotional arc.
Did you write using an outline or just sort of freeform?
No, I did not. I'm one of those people that they call a pantser. I write by the seat of my pants. I see where my characters take me. And then I go back and outline what I've written and pull out what doesn't belong. And develop what needs to be further developed.
Huh. What do you learn in the process of writing this book about such important themes about yourself? Things you didn't know or didn't expect.
Wow, that's a really good question. Again, when you're writing a book, it's like looking into a mirror. And people ask me, "Well, what character is most like you?" And I realized that there's a bit of me in every single one of those characters. The father is probably my ego. And Aunt Pearl is my nurturing self. I practiced massage for 25 years. I donated a kidney. That's my, you know, my Aunt Pearl, my inner Aunt Pearl. The times when I'm maybe a little bratty or feel like manipulating or feeling jealous or whatever, that's probably the sister's joy and chastity. Mama is probably my most vulnerable self. But probably the one I identify most with is Lola, who's the bohemian little kind of artsy-fartsy girl that joins their school in I think it's her fifth grade class.
You know, it's so interesting that being a lifelong reader and written a few things, mostly in my profession, but it's a craft, and you learn how to do it, and the more you read and write, you know, the better you get at it. But also, what your discussion just made me think of was the diversity, which of characters, of ideas, of approaches to life, which makes things so interesting. Something that's not just one ingredient or not overly sweet or salty, but a nice blend, a nice balance of the old and the new, of the conventional and the, you know, the oddball, you know, thing from left field. And I'm remembering a quote from one of my favorite authors, James Ellroy, who writes a lot of crime novels, and they're called noir because the heroes are often flawed, great qualities and horrible qualities in the same person. But one of his policeman friend asked him one time, "Well, why do you always write about rogue cops or bad cops and disrespect us?" And he said, "Because good cops don't make good fiction."
Exactly.
You've got to have that struggle.
My main character, Grace, is flawed. She's very, she's a good girl, but she's flawed. She's very awkward and makes many missteps.
Physically awkward, emotionally?
Both. She feels like an outsider, and I could relate to that, you know, growing up, feeling kind of the oddball. I was the gal that would go out during recess and read while the other kids, you know, played hopscotch around me.
Hmm.
I had more friends that were older than me growing up. But I also was very, very close to my siblings. And still am, even though we're geographically distant. I think in the prologue is a really good example of that closeness. The prologue opens up actually in the womb with Grace and Isaac communicating their last thoughts to each other before they're born.
Oh, my gosh. That gives me goosebumps. Oh, my.
We probably don't have time to read it, but well, that's my favorite part.
If you'd like to, why don't you? Is it handy?
It is. It's
read
handy.
That passage?
It's handy, and it's not very long, so please, I'll read it. And
please do.
And you can see. This is spring of, let's see. It opens on March 13, 1958. I'm spooning my other, my belly to his back. I love the way his body feels against mine. Although we've changed positions many times, we always come back to this. Over the last month, our warm water pool has slowly transformed into a room with soft walls shaped like us. Now we're squeezed so snugly together, I sometimes forget where I leave off and he begins. From the time we joined each other in the darkness, we've always felt as one, exchanging thoughts merely by thinking them. If a question forms in my mind, he answers. We know each other as well as we know ourselves. I am to go first. A few days ago, my other slipped away from the entrance to the world and waited while I settled into the soft floor of this now nearly waterless ocean. I'd always assumed he would lead the way. Our mother sang to us this morning. Sometimes she reads to us, or occasionally she just talks, as if she knows we can hear her voice above the thundering of her heart. I wish she could hear my thoughts as clearly as I hear her laugh. I'd tell her how wonderful it's been, this liquid home where she's nourished us with her rich blood, and I'd assure her we are healthy and anxious to be in her arms. I'm afraid, I think to him. It'll be okay, he thinks back. I don't want to leave you. I'm right behind you. What if the door closes? It won't. The walls are closing in. The pressure against my body is nearly unbearable as our mother pushes me out of the safety of our home. She's crying, begging us to come to her. I close my eyes and allow myself to be funneled into the snug passageway. He's right behind me. He's right behind me. He's right behind me.
Wow. I don't know. That is one of the most moving things I've ever heard.
Wow, that's wow. I'm really honored.
Knowing, as we know, being the readers in the real world, that the brother didn't make it, and that the mother subsequently had issues, I guess it brings to mind, many things, but. Even in the womb, there's no doubt that the children are aware on some level, the babies, and thinking grand thoughts. My personal view is that they're inhabited by the souls of angels, which we forget as we grow, but it starts out that way. And that's especially the bond between the kids and the mother. That's incredible. Just briefly, towards the end of our discussion, Aldana, I'd like to touch a little bit on social issues. Specifically of women coming into their own, being respected as co-equals with men, and not necessarily the Me Too movement per se, but things we can do and say that will help women be partners with everyone else, giving their gifts and providing leadership. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I remember when I was first started, got into the idea of writing and publishing, and I heard that there were women who were changing their names to male pen names, and they were actually getting way more hits from agents and publishers. And I found that really, really sad. And even when I published this, I know one of my nicknames is Ellie, and it's a much more approachable name probably than Aldana. Is a very strong name, and I was adamant that I did not want to use the name Ellie as my name on the book. And I understood why she said it, but I think we all us women need to stand up for ourselves and feel solid in our choices, and that we're making these good choices for ourselves. Authors especially, and writers, need to stand up for each other. It's not a competition, you know, and I strongly believe that it's incumbent upon all of us, especially creatives, to reach out, reach behind us, and pull up the people who are following in our footsteps. I approached six different authors, I think, to read, to possibly blurb my book, and five of the six shockingly said yes, and I'm so grateful for that, because I know I'm going to be in that position I don't know if I answered your question, Brian. I just think it's really about supporting each other.
Right. And the craft of writing and enjoying is a dialogue, really, between your talent and your soul and that of the reader. I wrote a sort of an acknowledgement the other day to the agent of a author who wrote a book I just read and enjoyed it quite a bit. And I heard back from that author by way of email the next day. And you can tell, reading between the lines, that there, he, in this case, was very flattered to get the feedback. I don't think a lot of people feedback to the authors and so forth. Speaking of that, are there events that are coming up or people, your website that people need to be aware of, things going on where they can get to know you better, learn more about you, your books?
My next event's probably going to be in Colorado in August, so that's probably not very relative. But when you're building your platform, you know, you have to kind of choose that works for you. And I'm most active on Facebook, and it's just if you search Aldana Edwards author, I have a personal page, but Aldana Edwards author is one of the ways to keep in touch with me. I'm also on Twitter and I'm on Instagram. I also have a blog. If you Google my name, you'll find me. I'm really easy to find.
And you are, I think you mentioned earlier, you're engaged in the Writers' Conference. And
I teach at the Writers' Conference, and I'm going to be doing a library talks in the fall at several of the library branches, and that's still developing. I don't have the times for those yet.
Well, that's excellent to know, and people can look those kinds of events up and much more at slowlibrary.org. This has been Brian Reynolds, volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library for Issues and Ideas on KCBX, public radio for the Central Coast. Today we were joined by author Aldana Edwards and discussing her new book, This I Know. Thank you so much, Aldana.
Thank you so much, Brian.